Fourth and final hour, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Steve DiAsi is with us, as he has a want to do on Fridays during the football season. We like having him in here. He's fun. He agrees with me and all arguments against
all the time.
Every single matter that
he might actually be a nominee for the Heart and Hustle Award.
He should be.
So I'm all about both. I'm proud of it too. I will accept the award gratefully, graciously, and humbly.
Well, thank you very much. Out for you, certificate next week.
Come with a gift card.
Yes.
Oh, good.
We'll find one around here somewhere.
Dunkin' gift card.
We'll find something for you.
Nice.
A nice Subway sandwich and a Dunkin' gift card.
Hey, now we're talking.
There you go.
Whatever it takes. We will talk to Michael Irvin in just a little bit. We've kind of caught you up on the news of the day so far, some of which has come from the Bruins. And during the award-winning trending now.
Thank you, Dale.
Moments ago, you heard the news about Tuukka Rask. You now know everything we know.
That's it.
Which is that he's been granted a leave of absence by the team to attend to what they describe as a personal matter. General Manager Don Sweeney said it is not health-related, and he asks that people respect the privacy of the player involved.
So there you go. That's all we know now. And also, I think it was Bruce Cassidy said today, so they have a game on Saturday and a game on Sunday. Normally, you know, when you have two goaltenders, you would split those up. But because they're going to have to recall or bring somebody up, Halak,
Providence plays tonight. They're going to bring somebody up after the game.
Yeah, but you could see Halak start both games and hopefully look a lot better than he did last night.
So that's what's the situation with the Bruins. Oh, they also recalled Jacob Forsbacka Carlson. And according to Bruce Cassidy, he will center the third line tomorrow night.
Yeah.
That's what we know. I mean, he kind of knew after that god-awful effort last night there
what
was going
to
be some sort of a it's not like they can overhaul the lineup or something, but there was going to be something done.
Right.
I'm not sure Jacob Forsbacka Carlson counts.
You don't think he's the sweet elixir
major,
that they needed?
There's a major shakeup, but you know.
Not.
But do they need a major shakeup or do they need some tweaking? I mean, that's
they need a couple of the wingers that are not named Marchand or Pastrnak to score goals.
Anybody?
That's what I mean.
Right.
Well, and they DeBrusque actually got it last night.
Yeah, DeBrusque scored a couple of goals. I mean, that really wasn't their problem. I mean, they ended up scoring five goals in the game, so that wasn't the problem. But other things were, I mean, some sloppy play, turnovers, everything else. They had their issues.
All right, let's get back to the calls as we await the arrival of Michael Irvin. Let's go to Bob down in Sandwich. Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Hey, can you hear me okay? I'm on one of these new earbud thingies. I'm not really tech.
You sound great.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
So far, so good. Well, I called in. I know Fourier's not on your show, and that's probably for a reason. As far as you guys go, you want the best. I called.
Wow.
Quick shot at Christian. All right.
Quick jab there. Yep.
This whole thing is kind of a shot at Christian because I've been very frustrated for a long time watching football. I always wonder why they go into a goal line formation on offense. It just seems stupid to me because you're packing the whole defense right in between the hash marks, and you're trying to punch it right up the middle. Doesn't that seem to make more sense to put two wide outs on both sides and then get all the safeties and everything and give them something else to think about and then try and punch it up the middle? You got middle linebackers back off the line instead of putting everybody interlocking and having to go 10 on basically 11 or even 9 basically on 11 trying to get into the goal.
Well, if you split out two receivers, you're only bringing two defenders out there too usually.
Aren't you also pushing the safeties back and in case they go deep and cross instead of packing a million defensive linemen? And
now, Bob, yes, are you talking about on the goal line or just like third and short? Like, are you saying like on the one where like they really have the safety has nowhere to go?
Yeah, I was
like,
gonna say
there's fourth and one, or first and goal from the one.
A lot of teams nowadays, third and one is not necessarily a power formation.
I think you're seeing more and more
now
of the other way.
Absolutely right.
Throwing.
They're in the shotgun on fourth.
Absolutely
and one.
Right. But in terms of the goal line. Sometimes in those situations you're not covering where you can be a safety and still be only 2 yards beyond the line of scrimmage.
Well, I wonder if he was talking about that going back to the goal line stand that Green Bay had against the Patriots,
right?
Because that was some of the plays they ran there were kind of frustrating.
And you saw Green Bay packing in. That's fine too. And
the Patriots play calls on third and goal and fourth and goal from the one frustrated me.
Well, outside runs the
Tom Brady rolling out because that's a
rollout
strength.
Doesn't look right.
No, but that's probably just switching things up. If it doesn't look right to us, I'm sure it doesn't look right to Green Bay, who studied them a lot more extensively than we have. But again,
in that situation, and you know football a lot more than I do, I mean, don't you want to play to your strength?
Power,
and that is not Tom Brady's strength at
no,
all.
No, but sometimes you don't even have to play to your strength. You play to what's smart. Sometimes just
and Patterson was running the ball pretty well.
Power it up in there.
Worst yeah, he could have probably.
You know, how about this? How about Patterson, as fast as he is and as tall as he is, go up and over. Up and over yeah. the top. It's you know, whatever. Sometimes the most direct path is the right path. Ask Pete Carroll about that. You try to outsmart everybody, and sometimes all you need to do is man up and just push people around.
I mean, the assumption is always that while it's Josh's play call to Brady, that Belichick has veto power, where he can simply say, no, run it here. I mean, and we've heard some NFL films sound of things like that, right?
Yes.
So if Josh says, "Yeah, we're going to roll him out and throw it here," Belichick could just simply say, "No."
True. True. But he also has a ton of confidence in Josh and a ton of confidence in Brady, and I would imagine 10 years ago or so, whatever. I'm sure he probably would countermand Josh a little bit, but. In this situation, sometimes you give them a little leeway. I thought for sure they were just going to try to power it in. I thought for sure they were going to just play a little smash mouth football and try to get it. Again, coaches, even the best coaches in the world, will outthink themselves sometimes, and that's what it looked like on that goal line.
Let's go as soon as I hit the right button here. Let's go to George in Melrose. Hey, George.
Hi, Dale. How you doing? You're a hockey man. I always wanted the answer to this question. You were talking about the victory formation in football. And the three major sports, it seems like at the end of the game, baseball, you don't steal, and basketball, you know, you run out the clock. But last night, I'm watching the Bruins game. Vancouver has an 8-5 lead. They had a power play at the very end there. I forget who got the penalty. But they were, like, trying to press for a power play goal as, you know, there's 10 seconds left. They've already humiliated the Bruins in their own at the Garden, and they're pressing for a power play goal. I always thought that was how come no one takes offense to that in hockey? It seems like the other major sports.
Yeah, I got to be honest. If we were talking high school sports or midget hockey or something, I'd agree with you. When we're talking pros,
yeah,
your job is to stop them. If you can't, that's your fault, not their fault.
I know it, but why is it like, you know, pro football or pro baseball, you know, you don't steal base, you're in victory formation, Patriots, they wouldn't try to run up the score, and the Canucks have an 8-5 lead.
See, I don't think it has as much to do with running up the score as they don't want to take the chance on fumbling the ball away.
Do you think the Patriots ran up the score in 07?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I'm
you're talking about
they're talking about
running it up at the end of the game.
Yeah, they're all a little bit different though. Yeah. I mean, like he says, baseball you don't steal, okay, but you also don't just take three pitches. Like you're still swinging, like
right.
You can still hit a home run. You can hit a home run off a position player and hit for the cycle,
right?
Right, like we've seen that. And basketball is a little bit different because they'll run out the clock, but they also have certain rules, so they have to at least get it over half court,
right.
and then they have a shot clock.
Right.
So you can, like in hockey, if nobody does anything, you could stand there for 15 minutes.
Right.
Whereas in basketball, there are so many other rules in place that wouldn't be able to happen. So I think it's just the nature of the rules where they're going to have to play it to the end.
Did you ever feel a team was running it up against your team?
Yeah.
As frustrating as it is, you basically say, well, what are you going
to do? No, I was actually dumb enough to make a comment on it after the game.
Oh,
and,
boy.
And I got basically dressed down by Buddy Ryan, and he was 100% correct.
Who was the team? Do you remember?
Philadelphia Eagles.
Cunningham?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And what did you say? Do you remember, like, paraphrase?
I just made some comment as to how that was BS and, you know, that it's Bush, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, the game was over. And
when Buddy Ryan was told that I said that, he goes, tell something to the effect of, tell that punk it's his job to stop my offense, not mine. Like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you're,
he is, right?
You're 100%
you learned
correct.
A lesson that
I
day.
Did.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
It happened this week in the Rams and Saints game this weekend. In the aftermath of the game, Sean Payton was talking about his wide receiver. We got the exact matchup we wanted. Was it Marcus Peters who was playing?
Yeah, Marcus Peters had a tough year.
And he was saying, you know, we got the exact matchup we wanted on the long pass. And Peters took it personal.
Right.
And basically said, you know, why don't you tell him to shut up and coach his own team?
Yeah.
I'm cleaning it up a lot.
Yeah, he went in a different direction.
And I'm thinking, okay, it's unusual, in my opinion, for a coach to say anything that even sort of sounds like you're taking a shot at an individual player.
Right.
But, make a play.
Because you wouldn't get it here.
True.
You wouldn't get that here at
absolutely
all.
Absolutely make a play. And I think he might have thought he was being generic enough. You know, he didn't actually name the player by name or number. So he
maybe I heard Teddy Bruschi say this morning on ESPN that Sean Payton is a guy who does trash talk and does yell at players and does. Mm. Now, we've heard Belichick. Oh, shut up,
Mason.
Look at the scoreboard.
Yeah, he'll talk to some guys.
But
sure.
I don't think he seeks it out. He responds to it. I get the impression that Peyton actually looks for it.
I agree with you. And Bill Belichick is selective. Bill Belichick he'll trade jabs with great players. He doesn't just...
Oh, he's not going to talk to some bum.
He's not talking. Right. He's not talking to some backup linebacker that's trying to jaw at him. He's talking to
somebody
Ed Reed.
Somebody respects, probably.
Know, I mean, he... And that's more banter to him than anything else.
Usually he's killing them with kindness.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly
I mean, usually right. it's all, you're a great player. You know, it's the occasional big mouth who he will respond to.
Right.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But Peyton.
But there's also a big difference between in-game and then, you know, pre- and post-game, he's going to talk up the other team all the way. But then in-game, if some guy says something to him, he'll snap right back at
right.
him. No problem with that.
Yep.
Peter's in Milford. Hey, Peter.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Good. How you doing?
Great.
I think I'm gonna. This is for Steve. Steve, I was just wondering, what is Coach Belichick's son's responsibility? I see him around the head coach, his dad, quite a bit during games. I'm just wondering what his, you know, what his particular duties are.
Probably learning at the foot of his father.
Are we talking about Steven
or Steven's a defensive backs coach?
Yes, he's
correct?
Coach. Yeah. He's a position coach on the team.
Right.
The younger brother is doing the same route that
like coaching right. assistant or whatever
right.
the title
right.
is. Yeah.
Yes, and which and he's basically working his way up the ladder. You know, granted, it'll work up faster than you know someone who wasn't his son, maybe. But I can tell you this. Those two guys, what's his other son's name? I know Steven
is
and Mark.
Brian?
Yeah, Brian. Those two kids, I've watched him have conversations, football conversations with both of his sons when they were a lot younger, both at my son's high school games, Phillips Andover, where Amanda Belichick went and Belichick also went. And then he would bring them to Brown University to see some of those games. And I'm sitting behind the two, and they're having conversations about football. He wasn't grilling them about football. They were just talking about it. Matter of fact, I had a 13-year-old Steven, I think it was 13 or 14, explain a defense that I hadn't figured out. I've been watching it for a year and a half, and Bill just casually mentioned something about it to his son, and he says, well, what are they doing here? And, oh, yeah, well, they're dropping the monster down, and they knew Zach. So they're dropping the monster down, and Zach's coming on the outside, and they're dropping it into a one or a three, whatever. So I'm looking down there, I'm like, and Bill turns to me. He goes, "Is that what they've always done that?" I said, oh yeah, yeah. They've been doing that forever. And I'm looking down the field like, damn it! I just had football explained to me by a 13-year-old because I had a kind of an idea, but not really.
Sure.
And I'm watching it, and he explained it in one sentence. I was like,
well, you also see, there's always like a beat writer or somebody that at all these games way before kickoff, Bill will be out there on the field with either one or sometimes both of his sons, and like you can only imagine what they're talking about, right? They're probably talking about you know what the stadium, like other games at the stadium, and like what to expect and like everything else. So like, they're definitely learning a lot.
Well, Bill has talked in the past about you know his grooming with his dad, and you know breaking down game film when he was 10, 12 years old, And you can imagine that the Belichick sons, those conversations you were talking about, Steve, they've had advanced level football conversations beyond what most high school coaches in this state could ever have.
Agreed. That's exactly what it made me think. And I emphasize the fact that he was having a conversation with his sons. He wasn't grilling them.
He wasn't lecturing.
They were just talking about things. And I'm picturing. His dad was Steve also, right? Steve Belichick?
Yes, yes.
His dad, I could just picture those are the conversations that he had with his dad. And I'm seeing him pass it down. And hopefully they paid attention because it worked with Bill. I know that much.
Occasionally we'll get a caller who will talk about the nepotism here. And, you know, he wouldn't even have a job if it wasn't for Belichick. My guess is, and just a guess, that as they were working their way up through the ranks, as Steven did, and now I think it's Brian, as he's doing, my guess is he's probably as hard or harder on them than he is on other coaches on his staff.
I would think that there's expectations not to try to disprove anything, because obviously, you know, there's, we see coaches do it all over the place. I mean, it's not just them, but I can't imagine Bill Belichick would put his son in a position where he's in over his head, because you've got a bunch of other coaches. How many coaches are on the staff? 14, 15, yeah, whatever it is?
Yeah. Less than most teams, right. But still
plenty,
a number
plenty, of plenty of guys.
But there's no chance that Bill Belichick's putting his son in a position where the rest of the staff is looking at him saying, this kid's in over his head. This kid's not ready for this. This kid's not, this isn't going to go well. And part of it is probably the preparation.
Yeah. And I think a side topic of all of this is Belichick, when everybody's asking, you know, how long is he going to coach? And I forget if it was Curran or somebody who brought this up, and it was a great point. You know, part of these coaches that want to retire, it's to spend time with their families. Well, he gets to see two of his sons every single day. Now, I know you're not just hanging out and shooting the breeze. I know you're also at work, but Belichick has talked about that, too.
It's
like, what a
cool
difference that is, right? Yeah. Like, you're spending all this time, but at least you're also surrounded by them.
Yeah, that's pretty
Steve
cool.
Steve Belichick is the safeties coach.
Safeties coach.
Josh Boyer is the cornerbacks coach.
Yep.
I mean, they have a tiny staff compared to most teams in the NFL. I'm looking here. Obviously, besides Belichick, you've got 6, 10, 12 coaches.
Right.
And weren't they... I don't know if they still are. They were,
and that's
like the
including
only...
the assistant special teams coach.
And they were the only team in the league that didn't have a former player on the staff at one point. Like, I think when they got rid of Pepper Johnson, they became the only team in the league.
Yep.
Which is kind of odd. It's an odd thing, but hey, you know.
It's odd, especially because the NFL has been very aggressive in trying to get former players into the coaching ranks and whatnot. So, but... Again, I'm not sure.
He's got his method, and it works.
Yeah, and I'm
he's
not...
got his guys. They go through the system, and then tries to promote from within.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm not sure that Belichick. I'm sure he'll look at a guy like Pepper Johnson and say, "Okay, well, the fact that he was a great player for so long and has done a pretty damn good job of coaching and I'm sure that's a plus on their side, but I'm sure it's not. It doesn't look like it's the end all to his decision making.
Mm-hmm. Danny Ainge's son works in the organization.
Yep.
I know he's a big part of the main Red Claws, but he's also part of the
Now he's with the
basketball operations staff here.
Yep, he's on staff.
I don't have an issue with this stuff.
It happens all the time.
I mean, I guess it bothers some people. It doesn't bother me a lick.
No, as long as they end up and at this point, like, what do you? I don't know if anybody cares. So it might just be a straw man. Like, he's a safeties coach. Like, so what does that matter? But like, once you start to get promoted, like, if a guy has the head coaching job because of that, well, guess what? He's not going to have it very long if he's not very good.
True.
You know,
absolutely,
I mean, you look at, there's been other, you know, whether it's Bum Phillips and Wade Phillips or Buddy Ryan and Rex and Rob Ryan. Like,
well, that one didn't work out so well.
No, I mean, it did for a minute, not with Rob, but with Rex did for a minute and then it didn't. But I mean, so we've definitely seen plenty of father-son coaches in the league.
Oh, no doubt.
Some work out better than others.
There's a bunch in the league right now. Yeah. I mean, Shanahan's, who else? There's a number of others.
Oh, yeah, right. That's Shanahan's a good one.
Greg Williams, I think, even brought his son on board in Cleveland when he took over there.
He probably did.
There was, and this doesn't have to do with his sons necessarily, but there was a great moment. The inside the NFL footage that they had this weekend on Showtime, and the game comes to an end, and you see Belichick congratulating Josh and giving him a big hug and congratulations. And then he gives a big hug and congratulates Brian Flores. And he says to hold that team to 17 points, that's really something.
Yeah.
Now, Brian Flores doesn't have the title of defensive coordinator, even though he's calling the defensive plays. You know, he's technically listed as linebacker's coach on the Patriots, you know, coaching tree here.
Yep.
But I saw that, and I listened to Belichick really giving the guy calling the defenses, you know, the props here, and I thought, he'll be the defensive coordinator here next year by title.
Well, how many years did it take Patricia to get that title? I think he was probably 2 years of play calling, maybe 1 year. I don't remember exactly, but it was I know it took a little while. We talked about that before when Patricia was still calling the plays, but wasn't officially the DC. Well, that probably comes along with a raise too, and.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'm sure he got a raise.
I'm sure he
not
did.
As significant as it will be when he's got
DC,
the title to go
absolutely
with.
Absolutely right. Not even a question.
And a lot of that, I've always thought that part of that in Belichick's mind was A, they got to show me that they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine with that.
Yep.
And B, it's, you know, Don't let Brian Flores have to sit here and answer questions. Talk to me. You know, I'm
yeah, you know what? I hadn't even thought of that, but yeah, that makes sense. You're absolutely right. Now, all of a sudden, it's there's no true DC to go to where you can, you know, pin this on. And it's always been known that Bill Belichick's a part of any defensive game plan. The whole staff is – that's one of the unique things about Belichick's staff. There's willing and appreciated input from all sources on the staff. In this case, that might be a solid part of it. You know, let him ease his way into this. Everybody understands he's.
I think it was 2000.
He's the DC.
2010. I think they didn't have any coordinators.
Yeah.
Either side.
I don't think so. Dante was listed as a assistant head coach.
Yep.
Bill O'Brien was the quarterback's coach. Yeah, I don't think they had one. And Matt Patricia was the linebackers. And then Bill O'Brien was an offensive coordinator in 11, but they still didn't have a defensive coordinator. And then finally Matt Patricia in 2012.
So he spent 2 years basically.
Yeah.
Because he was calling the plays.
Calling the D and not having the title.
Yeah, he spent 2 years as the
And he got kind of elevated over Pepper Johnson, which was kind of I think what signaled to Pepper, all right, if I want to get a promotion, I probably need to go somewhere else.
And that's exactly what Pepper said. He said, and from what I understand, he was probably told that too.
You know,
it's one of these scenarios. So
617-779-7937. There have been flight issues for Michael Irvin. Did not land when it was expected he was going to land.
No.
He will likely not be with us today. And look, if he suddenly lands and shows up, we'll be happy to put him on. But that may not happen.
Right.
We'll give you some embarrassing moments involving me, though, when we come back in just a couple of minutes.
How do we choose?
No, one in particular, because it's the most recent.
Okay.
Take Dale and Keefe with you wherever you go. Download the Radio.com app. Now back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
(617) 779-7937 is the telephone number. Again, Michael Irvin is still on an airplane. That got delayed a little bit. If Michael had joined us, he would be brought to you by the VA New England Healthcare System and Falmouth Lumber and your local Anderson Windows dealer. So we had a snafu last night on the Nesson telecast.
Oh, no. You hate to see it.
It sometimes happens. And the guys this morning were getting a real kick out of it, and I thought, what the hell? I can't keep this from you guys. You guys would want to listen to it and laugh as much as they were listening to it and laugh. So,
I know exactly what this is.
I think it was the end of the first period.
It was.
If I remember right.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jack is, you know, doing the toss to me. And let's just say it didn't go quite as smoothly as we might have hoped.
This season.
Absolutely did the right thing there in the first period. Welcome to our first intermission report. Sorry, I couldn't hear a darn thing there.
I was like, is he skipping right now? Like, what's happening?
Right?
And without boring you with all the details, there's a simple little thing that goes on. Jack throws it to me. I start talking, and I hear myself in my headphones, and I know my mic is open.
Right.
They don't leave it open all the time.
That
would be really embarrassing.
You would not be working there.
So I started to say absolutely, and I don't hear anything. So I wait a second. I say it again because I'm thinking, you know, they'll turn the mic on.
Epps. I thought you were trying to get Abby Chin's attention.
No,
Epps. Sure. Epps.
Is that her nickname?
Epps. I've heard
absolutely.
Max call her Epps.
So after about the third Epps, when I'm waiting,
Epps.
Absolutely. My producer says in my ear, "We hear you fine." Well, I didn't know because I couldn't hear anything.
Did it ever kick in, or did you do the whole?
Yeah,
even
when I started talking and said absolutely, and then I double clutched it again because I still wasn't hearing myself.
Billy's looking at you like, "Go ahead."
Yeah, what are you?
Sorry,
I didn't hear the thing
there. Billy's looking at me like,
young.
"Whenever you're ready."
Billy's looking at me like, "What, did you just have a stroke?"
Yeah, I was like, "Everything okay here?"
I mean, you know what? It's live TV, and sometimes stuff happens, and. I am sure as hell not throwing any audio guy under the bus or anything like that.
Good.
By name.
I've already spoken.
Or not by name.
That person's already been fired. Don't worry about it.
He's been killed.
Killed.
I just couldn't hear anything, so I didn't think I was on the air. And that's what happened last night. And either that or I was trying to get some workout video. It was an audition tape.
Abs. 7-minute abs.
Abs.
I was ready. It's supposed to work. I don't know if it does or not.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes stuff happens.
It's good.
Agreed.
It's all good.
It's live radio, live TV. Sometimes, yeah.
Hmm? Surprised more things don't happen.
Sorry, I couldn't hear a darn thing there.
Yeah, I wasn't, had no idea we were even on. I was hoping we were on, we just didn't.
You
were
like loud and clear.
All right, back to the calls with you guys. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Ryan is in Londonderry. Hey, Ryan, how you doing?
Good, Dale. How are you?
Great. What's going on?
So I don't know why I always find the need to tell you this, but I met you. My son and I were at the Jimmy Fund telethon one time, and I sat with you and Michael. So
Thank you.
Special spot in my heart for you, and keep you doing well.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a special spot in my heart for that event, so thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. The nepotism thing, it kills me, and because I have friends that say it all the time about the Belichick boys. Oh, their father wasn't a coach. I worked at IBM for 10 years, and every damn person I hired was somebody's nephew or son or daughter.
That's a good point. Most jobs are like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I got to tell you, my son, Dale, he's a freshman at UMaine, and he took introduction to business, and I asked him, hey, how's it going? He said, Dad, you taught me all this when I was in the eighth grade. And why wouldn't you hire your kids? Because he's around me all day long. I'm on the phone. I'm doing business. I'm telling him what I'm doing. Heck, my kids are more qualified for business than some other kid that's dad's, works as a chef. I mean, why wouldn't you hire them?
And you bring up a good point in addition to the fact that, you know, he's probably got a Ph.D. in coaching just from being around his father all this time. But the other part of this is the people who don't like it, that Steve Belichick is the safeties coach, if they had the name of another safeties coach who they'd rather have, I'd half understand it.
Right.
They just say, well, it can't be him. He's Belichick's son.
Right, right. It makes no sense. What the whole nepotism, it's evolved to not sure, the meaning of the word is basically, you know, hiring or facilitating the hiring of family. It's come to mean something when you're hiring someone who's not qualified. The nepotism has been, there's nobody sits there and says, oh yeah, nepotism is a good thing. Well, what if your son or daughter happens to be the most qualified person and you feel comfortable
because they're doing it the right way,
it's a private
too.
Business. Yeah, doing it.
He's not like he started him as the D coordinator yeah, in his like, first year on the staff.
He was the defensive assistant from 2012 to 15, and he's been the safeties coach since 16.
Yeah.
So the guy has already been with the team for 6 years.
And how old is he?
He's 31.
No, 31. So let's see. 2005, 12 years ago when 13 years ago. More than that now. 14 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
14 years ago, he was smart enough to teach me a little football.
Right?
Exactly.
And he's only added more to it, you know?
Right. So it's one of those things you look at and you're like, you know what? Does Bill Belichick think he's putting his team in danger by hiring his son?
No. Not even close.
Did he move along faster than maybe some others? Probably. Those things happen sometimes. But if he was unqualified,
well, let's just say, I mean, it obviously it gets your resume to the top of the pile. Like,
of course,
like
it does.
You get the job that way. But then, in order to get promoted, and again, in this type of business, this is a little bit different than what the caller was talking about, because in that type of business, maybe if your father owns the company, he can maybe look the other way about your poor performance. But if Steven becomes let's say hypothetically, he becomes the defensive coordinator and they get shredded and they're awful, you can't keep making excuses for him. He'd be gone.
Well, nepotism in your case, Steve, as you freely admitted, it allowed you to get a lot of free stuff out of Zach's locker stall at the Giants facility,
and I'm not even talking about his Nike account, all right?
Yeah.
which pretty soon he'll understand that I have the password for. So,
oh no!
All right, but absolutely right. I'll do that in a minute. I don't care, mm-hmm. and he doesn't either. So I tried to offer him a job, but he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to make steaks.
He's got one
now. Yeah, he's all right.
Probably doing fine, as the captain of the New York Giants.
I offered him a job. He offered to buy my restaurant. Oh, thanks.
Never mind.
Nepotism again.
Never mind.
See, the other part of this is, in my experience here, most of the people who bitch about it are the people who don't like Belichick anyway.
True.
So whatever he's doing must be wrong, and if he hired his kid, he must be wrong, and if his kid's a safeties coach, it must be wrong. There must be somebody better. They're the people who, it wouldn't matter what Belichick did, it would be wrong anyway. 617-779-7937. John's on the cell phone. Hey, John.
Dale. Keith,
yes, sir.
How's it going?
What's up?
Steve, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Dale, you know this is a crawl on my side for a long time. I want to talk about Tuukka Rask, and here's what I want to say. He had an opportunity last night to bail the team out. Now, they didn't deserve to win that game. I think we can all agree there. But for God's sake, I mean, is there a goalie in the league that handles the puck worse than Tuukka Rask?
I have no idea, but I mean, look.
Does it seem like every time he comes out to play the puck, something bad happens?
John, can I just point out to you they were down by 2 goals when he came in?
I understand.
They didn't come back and tie.
Nope, they didn't. And like I preface it by saying they didn't deserve to win. But that was an opportunity for Tuukka Rask to at least claim or half claim his position back that, quite frankly, I'm questioning whether or not he deserves, because I understand that it's hard to move the guy, but there are teams that he can be traded to.
There are only 8 that he could be traded to based on his contract. 8 teams that are eligible for him to be traded to. And my guess is, if you're lucky, 1 of the 8 either wants him or could afford him.
I guess the point I'm making, Dale, is, and look, again, I understand they didn't deserve to win the game last night. At the end of the day, if coaches have a time frame where, you know, it's time to move on, players do as well. And this guy's been here a long time now. People don't really realize it. But this guy, what's he, 12 years in the league now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's not working out. And it's just, I look at the guy, and if you had a John Dennis way of explaining it, Tuukka Rask, good goalie, not good enough. It's just, for the money he makes, he just leaves too much.
John, I have no problem. I have no problem with you having an issue with Tuukka Rask and how he plays. My point is, no, he didn't have a chance to seize it last night. They were down by 2 goals when he came in, and they never tied the game.
But I think if he plays better, not that they necessarily win, but I think it's more of a, okay, maybe
The one goal, the shorthanded goal where he misplayed the puck and Horvat steals it and fires it into the net. It was awful.
No, but I don't know if this is what John was saying, but it could be more of a building block, whereas all season long, Halak's been the best goalie in the NHL, and Rask has been struggling. And now if you take the game where Halak plays far and away his worst game, and then you combine that with Rask looking good, even if it's only for a period and a half, you say, all right, well, maybe now things are settling back to where they should be.
See, here's the problem I have with your thought process on this. I didn't blame Halak for how bad they were.
It was a team effort.
So I can't blame Tuukka for how bad they were. They were awful. Everybody on the team was bad. Giveaways.
They put those guys in bad spots.
And so if I don't blame Halak, how do I then turn around when Tuukka comes in trailing by a pair and they still don't come back?
No, I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying, like, maybe it was an opportunity. Whereas if he's the one guy on the ice that did have a good game, maybe you start to, like, oh, he's going to build some momentum here and turn things around. Whereas I still see him as a guy who has played whatever it is, 7-8 games this year, and has really not been very impressive.
But at that point last night, it would have taken a lot of cooperation from his teammates to put him in that position.
And they didn't seem willing to cooperate.
That was just a lost night at home for some reason.
And as it turns out, of course, we had no way of knowing this last night. As it turns out, if he had gone out there and played great, and they had come back and won the game, he was still going to get a leave of absence today.
Yep.
So it's not like he was going to go back in net tomorrow night.
No.
You know, we didn't know any of that last night.
No, we didn't know any of that, and we still don't know much about it. And not to, you know, jump into his personal life, but you wonder, has this been on his mind for a while? Like, we don't know what the situation is.
Has this been something he's been dealing with?
Mm. I don't know. Maybe it is. And then that could, you know, explain a little bit of, you know, because this is not – even the critics of Tuukka Rask, this is worse. I mean, it's a small sample, in the season, but this is significantly worse than anything we've ever seen of him.
And again, we don't know. They're not telling us, nor should they. All Don Sweeney has said is that his leave of absence is not health-related. I took that to mean Tuukka's health.
I assume so.
And that he then asked that we respect the respect the privacy of the player. I mean, it's kind of, without them telling us, it sort of sounds like somebody's dealing with a health issue, not him, and he's got to be there for someone,
which all
of us would understand. All of us would say, okay, go do what you got to do. Take care of who you got to take care of.
And it's up to Tuukka to talk about it. It's not up to the team to talk about that.
Oh, absolutely.
That's not even a question. Yep.
And in a way, it almost... In a way, it almost applies to the McAvoy stuff. Now, we had Don Sweeney on last night, and Billy asked him about Charlie McAvoy, and he didn't tell us anything. Today, Don Sweeney acknowledged that McAvoy has been in the concussion protocol since October 18th. What we forget about is that Don Sweeney can't tell us that without Charlie McAvoy's permission.
Right.
He can't. He's not allowed to. So it may be that today McAvoy said, go ahead, tell him. I'm in the protocol. I've been in the protocol. You're not allowed to do that without, in this case, the player or the patient's permission.
Right. But there hasn't
been. Which is so bizarre to me, right? When you get into like how players are all on the injury reports and everybody has these injuries and then they can't say anything. That's kind of.
Is it all injuries or is it concussions in the NHL that they can't talk about?
Well, as I understand the HIPAA laws with anything, I mean, you can't say anything. Even.
But why
they do the whole upper body, lower body injury.
But couldn't Belichick tell all the guys on the team, like, hey, enforce your HIPAA law, and now you won't be on the injury report?
Yeah, but the injury report.
Oh, no, the injury report's different.
It's different.
But I'm saying the Belichick can't stand at the podium and say, yeah, you know, we've had an extra MRI done. The left knee looks like, I mean, he can't do that. They have to on the injury report.
Every other coach in the league does.
Not to that extent, but they definitely.
Think about the post game press conferences when they come in. They're like, all right, this guy's got a concussion. This guy's getting an MRI. Like, they go right through it.
Yeah. It's also easier to watch. It's always a production when a guy goes into the concussion protocol from the field. I mean, that's almost well documented by video. And injuries you can see fairly easily, too, you know, for the most part, anyway.
What else you got is coming up next, including a very special anniversary, Keith.
Oh, I can't wait for
this. One that will be very touching for you. You'll want to keep in mind.
Is it about me, personally?
I don't think so.
Specifically about me?
I don't know what you were doing 21 years ago, but we'll... No.
Steve wants the keys.
Put those away.
Steve wants keys.
What? Nope. God.
Keys to BC Clemson.
Keys. Damn it.
Coming up next, Sports Radio WEEI.
This Sunday, the 7-2 Patriots make their way to Tennessee to take on Marcus. Back to Dale.
Dropping deuces right in front of you.
And Keith.
TV, movies, video games, spear, and my dogs, all I need.
On WEEI.
All right, that's a little creepy.
Love it.
As it's supposed to
be.
It's
a long entrance.
Well, sometimes they take a while.
Here it is.
Okay, there we go.
Had to skip ahead a little bit.
Wait for it.
Double clutched us a little
bit.
What
was happening? There you go.
All right, it is the end of the program, an opportunity for us to kind of kick around stories we might not have given you yet. So, Keith.
What else you got?
Let me tell you, Jeff Howe of The Athletic did a one-on-one interview with Malcolm Butler, who obviously all eyes will be on him on Sunday. There are some really good quotes in there. He is certainly not sugarcoating how bad he has been in the first half. So a lot of good quotes. One of my favorites is Malcolm Butler said, I evaluate my seasons in halves. The first one was bleep, so I've got another half to make up for
it. Could you spell out the bleep part for
expletive
me? I didn't get that.
That's what it says here in the article.
Does it start with an S?
That may be my assumption.
Probably.
Or really any word. Take any expletive and put it there. And that's what the first half was for Malcolm Butler, who has been the worst corner.
My first half was darn it.
According to Pro Football Focus, 39 catches, 618 yards, 7 touchdowns, all of which are the most among NFL corners. So he knows he's been bad. He knows he's put some pressure on himself, but he's looking to turn things around.
Yeah, do something about it.
And that's what he's got. Sunday's got a chance.
Don't start Sunday doing something about
it. Right.
Wait a week from Sunday.
Ease into this.
Yeah, get him next week.
All right. We got
what else you got?
What do you got, Dale?
This is a very big day. 21 years ago today. 21 years ago today, Keith.
Hmm?
You were a youngster then. You were just a wee pup.
I was a young pup of a kid.
Still playing video games, though.
Oh, I definitely was.
Yeah, you were.
Same amount.
One of the great athletic moments of our lifetime was 21 years ago today.
You talk about controversy. This crowd is living. Michael for the Sharpshooter has become champion. And Bret Hart is standing in disbelief.
The what? Montreal Screwjob was 21 years ago today.
No. 97, huh?
Wow.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
21 years ago today.
What a moment.
Vince and Shawn screwed Bret Michaels
out
of the heavyweight championship.
Now let me ask you this.
And then Bret Michaels spit in Vince's face.
Bret Hart.
Bret Hart.
Right in his face. Good spitter. One of the great spitters of our day. Very similar to like a camel. He had good accuracy, good weight to it. That thing came out of there in a hurry.
It looked a little...
Did Vince know it was coming?
See, here's the thing.
To this day, the question is,
conspiracy
work or shoot?
Was it, because obviously it was a part of it was an inside work, but then was that greater thing all just a work? I don't know.
People ask the question. It was so big they had to go up to Canada to pull it off.
They did. They didn't want to risk it here. Because
it would have been, bedlam here if
they
tried that.
That's right.
Steve, thanks for coming in.
Good to see you again.
Good
stuff.
Tune in
tomorrow.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Don't forget
there it
is. BC.
BC football show tomorrow. So he'll be on with Butch Stearns and John Meter Perel. We will be on Monday from Gillette in the aftermath of the Patriots game in Tennessee on Sunday. OMF is coming up next. Sports Radio WEEI.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Thank you for stopping by. Goodbye.
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 Thank you
for stopping by.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.